Hey, gang, thanks for listening to the spinoff. So brace yourself. It's award season time again. And if you need help navigating the flurry of film awards coming down the pike, I've got a podcast for you to check out. It's called The Treatment, hosted by Elvis Mitchell. And Elvis goes beyond the plot to understand what inspires actors, filmmakers, producers, and others to do what they do. You can find The Treatment on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Schneider of TV Guide Magazine, and this is The Spinoff. This month, we are coming to you from the Langham Huntington Hotel in Pasadena, California, for the 2015 Winter Press Tour Gathering of the Television Critics Association. And miracle of miracles, we are all in the same room for once. Joining me on the podcast and literally sitting right next to me is Joe Adalian of Vulture.com. Hello, Joe.
Domo arigato, Mr. Schneider.
And returning as our guest panelist this month is Lacey Rose, the TV editor at The Hollywood Reporter. Hello and welcome back to the podcast,
Thanks
Lacey.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So first off, happy belated New Year, everyone, and happy TCA press tour if we're not all just exhausted and walking around in a zombie-like state at this point. So the semi-annual gathering of press and TV execs will be the top of the agenda today. We're also going to take a minute to reflect on this year's Golden Globes winners and the TV categories. There are a lot of folks who were pretty surprised by this year's winners. The lack of love for True Detective being one thing, but also big wins for shows like Jane the Virgin and The Affair. Do the results actually say anything about the direction the industry is heading? And does it even make a difference what might be hot at the Emmys? Or are all bets off when it comes to the Globes? And then we're going to zero in on one network that's seen a lot of change over the past year. Fox has new leadership, and their vision for the network is starting to become clear. Finally, we're going to go around the horn for our download segment and share the stories or shows that are top of mind this month. So, gang, TCA, here we are at the Langham. There have been a lot of these TCA gatherings over the years. We've covered dozens and dozens of them. So, Joe, what's standing out for you this time around?
What's standing out to me is the fact that there's a more of an egalitarianism among the networks than perhaps ever before. You know, it used to be there was a big differentiation between networks and cables, and then between cables and streaming. Now they're, if not quite equal, they sort of blur together as just programming. And you can have a streaming service put on a session that's just as sort of important and just as buzzworthy as something on the networks. You can have cable networks which, you know, have more buzz around their shows or also just be completely snores. You know, never used to be that one of the big cable networks could be born, but now they can because if they don't have exactly the right programming. It's a leveling off between networks. It's just programming. And I think we saw that with the Golden Globes, which we'll talk about later. It just no longer, where you are no longer matters. It's what the show is. And I think people can get just excited. The sessions could be just as interesting, you know, and then it applies to broadcast. I mean, yes, a lot of broadcast sessions are sort of non-events, but some of them can be really interesting. So,
yeah, I mean, Lacey, ABC came by and touted their newfound diversity, and it's really paying off for that network. And they kind of had reason to crow.
I think that's exactly right. I think one of the things that's been interesting for me to watch, and it was definitely true with ABC as it was with the CW, is still how valuable a hit or a couple of strong programs can be. We were sitting here at this time last year and ABC was in a really bad place. We were wondering if perhaps the leader of the network would still be there. This time around, we're sitting there talking about How to Get Away with Murder, how strong their Thursday night is, Blackish being strong, Fresh Off the Boat coming and looking good, American Crime looking interesting. We're talking about a strong network.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Paulie
has a little more swagger in his step.
And deservedly so. Deservedly so.
Now, what's interesting is that we're all covering sort of the newly diverse primetime, looking at the success of Jane the Virgin and, of course, How to Get Away with Murder. But at the same time, we still have a ways to go with some networks and also, to some degree, how we even cover it. There was an incident at TCA where a reporter actually asked a mildly or not so mildly,
not so mildly
offensive question about Fresh Off the Boat, which is based on the memoirs of Eddie Huang about growing up in an immigrant family as they moved from D.C. to Orlando. So people are also still sort of figuring out how to cover this topic when...
It's still a topic, which is the unfortunate part, is it's still a talking point as opposed to just our reality. But I think, fortunately, what happened with ABC's schedule, which is so full of diverse options, whether that's a Cristela, whether that's a Fresh Off the Boat, whether that's a How to Get Away with Murder, had one or two of those not worked, I fear the reaction would have been, oh, well, diversity doesn't work. Let's go back to doing what we previously had done. Fortunately, that's not the case. So I think you'll hopefully start seeing a lot more sort of pushes in different areas with different storytellers casts of diversity.
And while I'm happy that ABC is trying shows with a diverse cast, and I think it's very smart, and I think it's a very smart business decision because they're catering to audiences that are underserved, I also think that it's given them a little bit of a free pass, because the fact is How to Get Away with Murder is absolutely working. It's a sort of diverse show. It's got a diverse lead and diverse auspices. But, Blackish's ratings are up from the non-family shows that ABC has done in the time slot. A recent edition, right, the first edition of the show back after the new year, finished fourth among all ABC's four comedies. Cristela, a show which I absolutely love and hope ABC nurtures, is sort of not doing all that great on Friday nights. It's doing okay. So I think ABC still has a lot of work to do, but certainly they've proven that the right kinds of shows can at least give them a pulse, and that's an important thing in this day and age.
Joe, another big story coming out of the TCA was AMC came to town, and of course they celebrated the end of Mad Men. The cast and producer was there, but also celebrated the rebirth of Breaking Bad via the spinoff Better Call Saul. Now, both of us have watched this, and if you were a Breaking Bad fan, there are going to be a lot of Easter eggs. It's going to be fun to sort of see the evolution of that story, both as a prequel, but also sort of as a what happened to these characters. Joe, what did you make of the pilot?
Well, I don't think we're officially allowed to review it just yet. I think there's an embargo, but yeah. I think I can vaguely say that I'm very interested in seeing more. And that I do think, though, you mentioned this is the rebooting Breaking Bad. I think it's really important for people to check their expectations. This is not Breaking Bad to Breaking Badder. And it's a very different kind of show. People who were looking for the adrenaline fix of Breaking Bad might not be wise to look here, but it's certainly a great cast, great storytellers, great visual style for the show. Boy, it sounds like a review I'm just doing right there, but these are all aspects of the show that I think bear watching, and I think it's AMC is also smart to put it on Monday nights too, maybe because expectations will be lower. There'll be less of an audience there, and we'll see about the competition, but. It's important for people to compare its numbers to early seasons of Breaking Bad and not later seasons of Breaking Bad, because by that latter standard, it will not work.
Right, and by the earlier standard, though those first couple seasons, it shouldn't be hard to improve on how Breaking Bad started out on. I mean, Lacey, what are your expectations for Better Call Saul?
Well, it's interesting. I was a huge fan of Breaking Bad. I'm, like I think many people, cautiously optimistic. I think that the co-creators who were at Press Tour made a really smart decision by standing up on stage and saying, or sitting on stage rather, and saying, Walt and Jesse will not be in the first season. And I think that that was very smart because otherwise viewers would sit there waiting to see them and then be disappointed when they didn't appear.
Yeah.
There's so much, such high expectations going into this. If you can put that in check in some way, I think you were really doing yourself a big favor.
Yeah. So they tempered it a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you make of AMC? This is going to be a big year for them, obviously saying goodbye to Mad Men on the heels of Breaking Bad, also having been gone now for a year. Those were the two shows that early on defined that network. Of course, they have The Walking Dead, which is such a mega hit that AMC will be fine for a while longer. But on the other hand, they've struggled to cultivate some new hits. They've got several things coming down the pike, including a Walking Dead spinoff that potentially could be a hit as well. But what do you make of where AMC stands right now?
Well, I think it's absolutely a huge transition year for them. I think that what Breaking Bad and Mad Men have been for years is, it's been a lot about cachet for them. And it's made AMC a destination for advertisers. It's made AMC a destination for talent. Without those two shows, I think it really changes things. I think, you've heard all sorts of rumblings about what it's like to work there. I think you've certainly heard people with not such positive things to say. I think you sort of have to take a wait and see and look at what the next phase of AMC looks like.
I think the good news for AMC is that they're not alone in transition. You know, FX is losing some big shows as well. They're losing Justified, which is not a big ratings hit, but certainly is a critical boon. They've lost Sons of Anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a Sons of Anarchy, not a spinoff at all, but they've got a new show from Kurt Sutter coming later this year. So hopefully that will fill the gap. It's coming at a time when TNT and USA are completely struggling to find any sort of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the good news for AMC is that with the biggest show on television among adults under 50 and with some interesting programming, that gives them time to be patient, to try some new things, to see if they can make a show like Halt and Catch Fire, which a lot of critics said got better towards the end, see if they can find a way to improve upon its dismal season one numbers. So absolutely, they're at a creative crossroads, but I think they're well positioned. You know, it would have been better for them had some of the stuff they've done over the last 2 or 3 years actually worked.
Right.
They'd be better positioned. They've been planning for this and it didn't quite work out. But it's, you know.
And it does seem like they're figuring out who they want to be now going forward. They dumped most of their reality, including all the reality development.
Yeah.
They refocused on acquisitions and new dramas as well. They acquired Humans, which was a show that originally was developed at Xbox, which looks really interesting and the critics are kind of fascinated by. So it's going to be an interesting year for them and for all cable, to tell you the truth, since all cable was down last year.
Right.
And all networks.
And the patience piece is an interesting one. I mean, I hope you're right that they will have the patience, just in the same way I hope there will be patience for Kevin Reilly to come in at Turner and try and turn around turn around to TNT. I don't know that there will be. I mean, I don't know that we live in a day and age that these corporate parents are going to sit there and have the patience. But we'll see.
I think if they don't, they're going to be making a big mistake, because we've seen time and time again, just when you think you can't do worse, you can.
Yeah.
And I think if USA, for example, a couple of years, I saw Greg Berlanti here, who's the producer of Flash and Arrow, but also did a show for USA, a miniseries called Political Animals. And they would kill to get the numbers that show was getting just 2 years ago, maybe three. And, you know, you need to constantly be evolving and tweaking your brand and not settle into the same old, same old. USA made that mistake. Turner made that mistake. AMC hopefully will go in a few different directions, and we'll see if they can sort of diversify their brand.
Well, guys, speaking of both transition and also being patient, late night is obviously something that's going to be a big topic this year. And so far at TCA, we've had Larry Wilmore stop by. He, of course, is replacing Stephen Colbert on Comedy Central as the host of the new The Nightly Show. And James Corden was also here. He's replacing Craig Ferguson on The Late Late Show in just a couple of months. So these are both hosts that are unknown to the majority of Americans. I mean, Larry Wilmore, of course, created the Bernie Mac show, and then, of course, was one of the creators of Black-ish, which we just talked about.
And the senior Black correspondent on The Daily Show.
On The Daily Show. So at least he's recognizable among The Daily Show crowd. So now Comedy Central hopes to introduce him to a much larger audience. And, of course, James Corden, if you saw Into the Woods, you're familiar with his work or his stage work if you're a big Broadway nut. But most Americans don't know who he is, and he's also got a little British accent. So, maybe that'll help fans of Craig Ferguson. At least they're trading one accent for another. But do we like their odds? And also, do we think the networks will show some patience as these hosts sort of find their way?
I would say that I think they're both in time slots where they have a little bit more patience than if they were on a half hour, an hour earlier. I think Larry Wilmore, the timing of that show and the themes of that show, which is really about sort of the underdog and the underrepresented, feels incredibly timely. Corden, I think, is an interesting bet. I mean, he's certainly one that I think CBS viewers do not know who he is. I will say he was charming at Press Tour, which certainly helps. That's a room full of influential people.
Yeah, he was cuddly at Press Tour. There was a moment where he talked about moving his family away from his parents in the UK, and he started tearing up a little bit.
I started tearing up a little bit for him, so he won me over.
Cuddly doesn't always make for good talk show hosts, most of whom are not all that cuddly.
Well, but he's right. He mentioned that these are different times. And I think that the ironic detachment of Letterman and Stewart and even Conan O'Brien, I think especially with millennial viewers, which is, let's face it, his show will go after in a big way, I think they welcome a little more earnestness. I think they're okay with that. I mean, Jimmy Fallon has made a huge career out of being completely earnest to the point of, you know, obsequious sometimes. No offense, Jimmy. The one thing I want to say about late night is that we are living in a golden age almost of content for late night. You know, think about 20 years ago. we were a Johnny Carson nation, and that's it. There would be a few little things on the side, Arsenio every once in a while, some failed syndicated talk shows, but it was Johnny who set the agenda. Now we don't have that one central figure, but we're going to have all brand new late night hosts, save for Jon Stewart and Conan O'Brien, who are now, oddly enough, going to be the old dinosaurs,
the old guard.
Yeah. Almost. And you're going to see a lot of experimentation. I'm very eager to see what James Corden cooks up at 12:30. Larry Wilmore is going to have a little bit of a tougher time, I think, because you're right, he's protected. Comedy Central has gotten used to having strong ratings at 11:30, almost as strong as Stewart's numbers. Now they're going to have a brand new show that's a different kind of format. There's going to be a little bit of a roundtable format.
Yeah, which is smart.
Which is smart because it's differentiated, but it's also not, it's not going to be as easy to form a, perhaps, unless Larry has some characters or a shtick to form an attachment to. And of course, he's having to establish his show, you know, instead of Colbert being the established force at 11:30 opposite the new guys, you've now got Kimmel and Fallon very well established, and very soon he's going to have to go up against the guy he's replacing,
his predecessor,
Colbert.
Yeah.
So suddenly the 11:30 slot, which Jon Stewart does not have to worry about, will get more complicated. So Comedy Central may have to temper their expectations, but the good news is it'll probably be a cheaper show to produce too, because Larry Wilmore is not going to be as expensive as Stephen Colbert, because he's not.
Not now, anyway. Wait a couple years.
He totally could be. But he's the new guy, and new guys are always less expensive than old guys. And it's a panel show, and so maybe less produced. But we'll see. Overall, I'm very excited to see what these new people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, James Corden, a couple things that excite me about his show is first off, his choice of band leader, Reggie Watts, who's an alternative comedian. You may see him on Comedy Bang Bang on IFC. That guy's nuts. And he'll bring sort of a real interesting, spontaneous edge to that show. The other thing that's interesting is it sounds like Corden's going to try to go the direction of what Graham Norton does and some of those BBC and UK shows do, where they have all the celebrities on a large couch all at once interacting with each other, which is a version of the format that we don't really see much here in the U.S.
Not anymore. Johnny Carson used to do that, by the way, back in the day.
When people used to stay on the couch.
Yeah,
exactly.
We used to love people staying
on the couch. He's going to bring that back. And what's also interesting about the CBS shows, in some ways it's a reverse of the NBC shows, where you have the smart, more cerebral host on at 11:30,
yeah,
and then the fun pop culture guy at 12:30, right. and NBC is the reverse of that. So it could be a good counterbalance to what they're doing at the Peacock. One final thing, guys, we should talk about from this TCA is, of course, the streaming services. So Netflix was here. Amazon, interestingly, was not. Interestingly, because they just won all those awards at the Golden Globes. But Yahoo was also here, of course. Their fresh slate of new programming, including the return of Community. So,
Is that the whole slate?
Well, they've got other things as well, but that's the one show.
About them.
That's the one show that they brought this time around.
Yeah.
It's interesting as these, dot-com and sort of Silicon Valley companies continue to enter the programming arena and the Hollywood arena. So first time out for Yahoo. What'd you guys make of their presentation?
I thought that I wasn't here for Netflix. I think Netflix is a powerful brand that continues to do well. I mean, I do think what's interesting is that Netflix, Ted Sarandos did meet the press. Amazon wasn't here to meet the press at all. Yahoo didn't have anyone talking about its plans, and so they're sort of going under the radar. You know, Amazon could have also talked about the fact that they just canceled a show that we all thought was in production, or we assumed it was in production.
Right.
And then when I'm talking, of course, about Chris Carter's The After, which was supposed to be premiering about now, and they decided not to, maybe to pay for Woody Allen. And they'll be fine. But that represents something that, you know, for all this, we're going to start seeing, I think, in the next year or two, the growing pains, or if not the growing pains, but the coming back to earth. Now that they've proven that they can compete, they're also going to have some of the same issues. You know, Amazon, by the way, has already adjusted its strategy. You know, they were going to do episodics. Now they seem to be doing all the episodes at once, all on Netflix. Netflix had Marco Polo, a show which they say is doing great, and I think they've renewed for a second season, but the buzz was not that great. You know, it's now that the newness is wearing off, they're going to have to compete in the marketplace, and they're going to soon, the way cable is, they're going to have to fight for attention, and you're going to see them, I think, playing up all different aspects of their service. You're going to see them playing up movies that they acquire and other series they acquire. They really have to compete.
Well, they're acting more like cable networks now.
Yeah.
I mean, as
sure.
they put more programming on, and of course that means the odds go down in terms of what's a hit and what's not a hit.
I think the benefit to them is that they can do it with the secrecy of not having to share their ratings. and therefore they get to define what's a hit and what's not a hit, and we are either forced to believe them or...
Although HBO defines what's a hit too, and so does Showtime. I mean, HBO just had Girls come back at 800,000 viewers and their brand new show Togetherness under 500,000, and it'll cum up, and we will know what the numbers are.
To an extent, but we know what the numbers are.
We know what the number is, but they say, well, it's a hit because
we're... And we also know when they eventually do cancel those shows, why they cancel those shows.
Sure.
Well, we can assume the same thing if suddenly... By the way, we can assume the same thing about the, was it Eli Roth show on Netflix?
Hemlock Grove.
Yeah. Well, that's not making it past a very short season 3. We can gather that wasn't very successful. We don't need to fight that battle, but I'm okay for secrecy because I'm glad to have at least part of the TV ecosystem be defined purely by, or somewhat purely by, what works for a brand as opposed to a rating.
Well, after the break, we'll talk about the Golden Globes, including a little more on the streaming services and how it was a big night for them. And we'll also focus in on Fox. Plus, we'll go around the room to share our monthly downloads. From KCRW.com, this is The Spinoff.
Are you thinking about buying a new car? Consider donating your old one to KCRW and support the unique mix of news, music, and culture you love. You'll become a KCRW member and get a nice tax write-off. For details, visit kcrw.com/cars.
And we're back. It's The Spinoff. I'm Michael Schneider, the executive editor of TV Guide magazine, along with Joe Adalian of Vulture.com and Lacey Rose of The Hollywood Reporter. So guys, let's just quickly touch on the Golden Globes. The shows that walked away big winners at the Globes included Amazon's Transparent, which scored for Best Comedy, and Best Actor with Jeffrey Tambor. And Kevin Spacey won for Best Actor in a Drama for another online show, Netflix's House of Cards. So guys, this is setting up. It's a big smackdown now. Amazon versus Netflix. So do we think maybe Amazon's going to step in front of Netflix and score the first ever big Emmy for one of these shows?
They certainly have a real shot with Transparent. I think it's the show that, you know, of the moment. It's a show that the heads of HBO, of Showtime, and of Netflix are all saying it's the show they wish that was theirs, and in some cases they passed on it earlier in the development process. Oh, the irony. But yes, this is a show that has a tremendous amount of momentum.
And Joe, Showtime's The Affair was another big winner. Sarah Treem, the creator, won for best drama, rather, and actress Ruth Wilson won as well. So this is a show that got a lot of critical attention, at least at the beginning of the series. But Joe, do you think a lot of people were sitting there wondering, what is The Affair, and do you think the award was deserved?
I hate award shows.
And
I hate prognosticating. And I like watching them, actually.
Yeah.
But I hate. But, I don't know. You know, I was a viewer of The Affair. I have opinions on The Affair. I think there's some fine acting in The Affair. It's I don't think it's going to get nominated for a lot of Emmys, but I could be wrong. I also continue to believe that the Golden Globes are sometimes a nice thing for oddball shows and movies to sort of get some love historically. I remember when Felicity won a Golden Globe. Never won an Emmys. Because the Golden Globes, you know, with a really good press junket and a focused promotional campaign, Golden Globes voters, all 50 of them, can be susceptible to doing things. And that's good. It's good that, you know, I guess that sometimes they're ahead of the curve, especially on their TV nominations. Overall, I don't give a lot of credence to what they mean. And I think Emmy voters, too, are pretty independent about what they do. So I don't know if The Affair is going to be able to compete in such a very crowded environment. I do hope that, if anything, what I still hope would happen is that the Emmys open themselves up to 10 nominations in each of the big categories and also institute a best new show rule. I think that would continue to be something that would bring some diversity to the nominations.
Yeah, and this is why I ask you, Joe, because I know this is always good red meat for you. And,
I know, which is, by the way, I hate awards so much. I hate for your consideration so much, yet I want to add more awards.
Exactly.
So go figure this out.
But the Globes like
add
to anoint
hour.
New shows. I mean, that's what the sort of the Globes are about. They get to anoint Transparent. They get to anoint Jane the Virgin,
because of
the
timing,
Affair.
Right, because of the timing they're there, and because they're, again, because it's much easier to sway 50 people than whatever 5,000 people are.
By the way, you mentioned Jane the Virgin. Nice shout out to Gina Rodriguez, who, of course, the star of Jane the Virgin,
that
who
was awesome.
Won for Best Actress, which is fantastic. We talked a little bit about her TCA appearance back in July and how that was sort of, you know, helped begin this star-making turn that she's on right now. So she keeps on charming the crowds, and who knows? Maybe it could mean something at the Emmys, which would be nice for the CW, which Absolutely. Never gets any attention from the Emmys whatsoever.
Would be totally deserved.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our third topic, Fox's plan for the future. Now, if you look back at some of our past spinoff episodes, even a year ago, back in January, we were sitting in this very hotel talking about the TCA press tour and also about pilot season and how it was changing. We all remember Kevin Riley showed up here, put up something on the screen, and declared pilot season dead. So, of course, a few months later, Fox did away with Mr. Riley. So back in July, we were talking at the summer TCAs and the fact that Fox had just announced their brand new leadership in Dana Walden and Gary Newman, who, of course, had run 20th Century Fox TV for many years. So now here we are 6 months later, back at another TCA. Dana and Gary are about to come for their first ever press tour session as the new heads of the network, as well as the studio. They're starting to reveal their plans as well. And Lacey, you just wrote all about Gary and Dana and their plans for the network. So tell us a little bit about what they told you. What is this leadership planning on doing?
Well, I think first pilot season is alive and well, it seems. It's been resuscitated. You know, I think that it's, look, they're in a position where they are not responsible for any of the current failures on the network and only get to talk in broad sweeping terms about where the network is headed.
And embrace the successful shows like Gotham. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You know, to sit there and say we want big, broad hits is very real. They don't want to go sort of narrow and dark. We'll take a wait-and-see approach, but I think that what they have done phenomenally well as studio chiefs for the last 15 years is really truly find that sweet spot between being both broadly appealing and also critically favored, whether that is a Modern Family, whether that is insert any of their other big shows, all of which I can't currently come up with.
Well, for a period of time, Glee, for example, was another one. Yeah.
But 24 for back in its day.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think with, as far as comedy go, I think that's been an area that they have been very vocal that they want to broaden out. You know, I think during the Kevin Riley era, they had, you know, he put on a lot of comedies that we, the reporters and critics, really loved, but they were very narrow comedies. I think they would like to sort of broaden those out and be more focused on sort of family shows versus these sort of more niche 20-something ensembles. And on the drama side, you know, big, bold plays. What that means, let's sort of wait and see.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, what do you make? Empire came on, you know, which is a show that came out of the studio. So Gary and Dana did have a hand in developing that as well.
Kevin should get credit for that one as well.
Yes,
he did absolutely
order
that.
But it, early on, you know, first week numbers, of course, tell nothing. But early on, at least, it looks to be, you know, a good potential player for them.
Potentially, you know, I also remember a year ago, last March, Resurrection came on ABC with about the exact same number as Empire. And everyone said, well, this is a hit because even if it falls 20-30%, it'll still be a hit. The show is doing under one rating now and will almost certainly be canceled in a few months. So that's the one thing with high concept shows, which Empire is, it's very easy for the audience to abandon. I don't think they will.
Right.
I think
Empire is though much more, it's a soap opera.
It's a soap opera, sure, but it's also, soap operas can also see also Revenge in Nashville can lose audience if they can't immediately. Not everyone has that Shonda magic. But Shonda Rhimes, by the way, has endorsed Empire. She tweeted out her love of the show the day after, which I still can't believe isn't all over Fox's marketing.
And I still think, you know, even now we kind of flippantly talk about, you know, Kevin Riley killed pilot season. I think everyone sort of, you know, misinterprets what he was saying.
Yes,
and everyone's kind of, you know, makes fun of that now. But he was saying what everyone is already doing, which is they're developing throughout the year. There isn't just a pilot season anymore. They're always working on shows. Which, you know, I don't know if that needed a big pronouncement because everyone's doing it. But, you know, what he was trying to say is we're changing the way we develop television.
And I think those kind of bold moves and pronouncements on some level, you know, are important. I think to sort of sit back and do business as usual, you'll die that way. So I don't fault him for doing that at all. And I think we all started covering it in the way we did because at least it was, you know, he had a vision.
It also detracted from his issues. And you know, in retrospect, I can now see that he did what he did a year ago to basically take our attention away from the ball, which was
Smart man.
That's my, yeah. And so that was part of it. And I think he genuinely believed it, but he could also have just done what he did without announcing it as a big, with a big graphic saying pilot season is dead. I also hope, and I'm a little worried though, that the current administration at Fox, Gary Newman and Dana Walden, are so anxious to differentiate themselves from Kevin Riley to the point where they go and bash the guy in Lacey's article, in my mind, even if subtly. Hi, Gary and Dana, they're not listening. But they shouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think their ideas, like I said, about how to develop that are good. You don't need to go straight to series orders, but it's certainly better than developing and picking up a whole bunch of shows in a couple months. And the proof will be in the pudding, to use a cliche, to see if they actually continue to sort of change the way TV is made.
Listen, one of the smartest things they did early on was hire David Madden over as entertainment president. David's a smart, reasonable, not splashy at all executive who gets the job done, who's developed a lot of great stuff over the years. And also just, he isn't noisy. He isn't making grand pronouncements. He's just getting the job done. And, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting things coming out of Fox, thanks also to David Madden. I mean, Lacey, you mentioned in your story about the final months of Kevin Riley's tenure, and you mentioned that he did seem a little distracted. Do you think that that's partly because of just where Fox was at the moment? And how do you think he's going to perform over at Turner?
Well, I think that, you know, we got to see what he was like in those final months. And quite frankly, he was very open and honest about the fact that he was sort of exhausted by the sort of broadcast process and disenchanted by what he was able to do in broadcast. And quite frankly, he was making a lot of shows that could have been made for cable and perhaps should have been made for cable. So I think it wasn't a surprise when he sent out the note to his staff, to me, that said, you know what, I'm not as excited about this business as I was, and this business being the broadcast business, as I was 11, 12 years ago when I came to it. In terms of the move to Turner, look, I think that it has the potential to be great. I think Kevin has tremendous taste. I think we've seen that for years.
Yeah.
I think it goes back to patience. I think he would like to make this a destination like an FX, like an HBO. The truth is that a TNT has had success with big, broad shows like Rizzoli and Isles. That's not what Kevin wants to do. And whether Jeff Bukas has the patience to wait to see what the kinds of shows he wants to do, how they deliver, we'll sort of have to wait and see.
Well, guys, now we're at the point in the show where we go around the room and each download the story or show that's top of mind this month. Joe, let's kick it off with you.
Well, my download this month is a show that's coming back for its third season in the coming weeks, and it's The Americans on FX. It's one of those rare shows that just keeps getting stronger every season. And just when I thought it couldn't get any stronger than season two, I've seen the first episode of season three, and it just continues to blow me away. You've got a show that's at once a great thriller that's about the relationships between some Soviet spies in the U.S. who blended in with the Americans. So you've got that thriller of sort of spies in Russian spies working against the American government with a family drama about what it's like to be Russians living in America as Americans, and your kids don't know who you are yet. I highly recommend catching up on the show on Amazon Prime if you haven't already seen it. It's about 26 hours that you can watch real quickly and then get on board for season three, because it's going to be a great ride and it's going to be around for a couple more seasons at least. So keep watching The Americans.
Yeah, that's a show that had one of the best cliffhangers I think I've seen in years, just set up such a great third season. So I'm looking forward to that too. Lacey, what are you thinking about right now?
You know, I think that Amazon coming out 48 hours after winning two really big Golden Globes and saying, hey, we just struck a deal with Woody Allen to write and direct a show for us, go straight to series, was a brilliant move. Whether we actually see said show down the line, I mean, is who knows? Who knows if Woody can actually do television, what this would actually look like. But I think it was a brilliant piece of marketing. I think it's a great calling card for them. And I think it says in an even louder way, we have arrived.
It took Amazon a while to sort of figure this out. We remember their first crop
Absolutely.
Of shows sort of were met with a little bit of a thud. But since then, they've really picked up, and now for the first time really look like a true contender versus Netflix.
I think that that's exactly right. I mean, I think that, yes, they tried a lot of things that didn't work. You can argue there. You can go on. I mean, I tried to go on to see Transparent the day after it won those two Globes, and I couldn't find it initially on their site. I mean, that to me is something that perhaps they should think about. It is worth noting that this decision is not without risk. We saw what happened with Bill Cosby in the last few months. Woody Allen is someone who has allegations against him. That is a topic that has a lot, that can get a lot of people very angry very quickly. It could become something that Amazon will have to address. So we'll have to sort of wait and see there. But I think as far as announcements go, it was one that got a lot of attention, and it helps further put Amazon on the map.
Well, for my download, I'm just going to look ahead at 2015 and what maybe some of the big stories are going to be for this coming year. And probably the biggest one that we're all going to be talking about and writing about nonstop is this over-the-top revolution. Here it is. It's coming. This is the year. HBO Go will be introduced, and we'll finally find out for sure just what that service is going to look like. Of course, Dish just announced their Sling TV service featuring 12 channels, including ESPN, which, who knows, could be a little bit of a game changer, especially with the youngins who just refuse to ever subscribe to cable, and others are on the way as well. So I think we're all going to be sick with typing out the word OTT by the end of the year. But it's coming, it's here, and how it impacts cable, how it impacts cord cutting remains to be seen. But this is going to be the year that we're all talking about and writing about it. So as always, thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Michael.
And thank you, Lacey.
Thank you.
That's Joe Adalian, the West Coast editor of Vulture.com, and Lacey Rose of The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow Joe on Twitter at TV Mojo and Lacey at Lacey V. Rose. You just had to stick that V in there, Lacey. And I'm Michael Schneider, the executive editor of TV Guide Magazine, and my Twitter handle is at Franklin Avenue. And that's it for this edition of The Spinoff, live from Pasadena. This podcast is produced by Caitlin Parker. Melissa Morton is our technical director. Production assistance today from Grant Buckerfield. You can hear past episodes of The Spinoff on iTunes, Stitcher, and pretty much everywhere you can download podcasts. You can also hear it online at kcrw.com and on demand with the KCRW smartphone app. Until next time, this is The Spinoff, signing off.